You are listening to Mommying While Muslim podcast, where hosts Uzma and Zeba share their personal stories of mommying in a post-9/11 world. This podcast is designed with the Muslim American mom in mind, so grab a cup of coffee and pull up to their table.
Assalamu alaikum, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Mommying While Muslim podcast. This is Uzma Jafri.
And this is Zeba Hassan. And Uzma, what did we receive in the mail this week?
This is a surprise. I forgot about this guy. Woo! This is what our golden crane looks like, guys. She's flying. She's flying. And for those who don't remember or forgot or aren't on our socials,
and
I don't know why.
We forgot too, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I totally forgot about it. I was like, what's in this box? We are the Golden Crane Podcast Award recipients for the Best Parenting Podcast of 2023.
Yay!
Asians representing. And interestingly enough, when we were growing up and circled Asian on the little census things at school, they made us erase it and put white.
Which is the weirdest thing.
You're not Asian. And it's like, I'm pretty sure India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh are in Asia. And they were like, no. You're white. So it was all about school funding things. So really weird, really weird. But yeah, to not have your identity, like be your identity, like people tell you who you are, like this is very validating. Thank you, Asian American Podcasters Association. We are so honored, so flattered. And this thing is heavy.
It really is.
Zeba already knows how she's going to use it in the future. So
I'm going to hit burglars when they come into my house over the head with this award.
They will die.
They will die.
They will die. That thing's heavy.
hopefully that's not happening. But, you know,
Inshallah, you never know.
You never know. And it's funny because we had an amazing November series with all of our kick butt mamas, or as Uzma likes to say, the kick-ass mamas. I try to avoid saying that words, but you know what, December is here and we wish we could say that it was a time for cheer. And we're not going to be able to say that. But with the resumptions of the text on Palestine, as of right now, Uzma just updated the numbers, over 20,000 civilians, half of which, the average age is what, 5? They're children. We are obviously, as Muslim, American Muslim mothers, we are hurt. We are angry. We are fired up. We have been put in jail for all of our activities because we just feel so passionate about it. And we were actually going to do our scheduled series for December was health and wellness and fitness and at the end of the world, at the end of the year and trying to kick in the new year. And obviously we had to pivot with everything that happened on October 7th. And we are dedicating this December to our special series, What's Really Going On in Palestine. We aren't going to be able to explain it all. Like, we aren't going to solve it all. That's not our aim. Our aim is kind of to like fill in the gaps of knowledge for you and for ourselves, to be very honest with you. Our first guest is a television and radio host. Her name is Nayara Huck, and she is on Sirius XM Talk Radio. We're going to put her things in the in our show notes. She covers The World Tonight on the Black News Channel. She's covering domestic and international news. She was their chief foreign affairs correspondent before all of that. Prior to that, she was a senior director to the cabinet. Yes, and that is the cabinet, the president of the United States, working on national security and economic policy. Senior advisor and spokesperson in the State Department, working on crises areas like Afghanistan, South Asia, the Middle East, which is why she's actually here today, Korea, Ukraine, and she served as an advisor for multiple Congress people, including Nancy Pelosi. Thank goodness we have somebody that's been kind of on the inside that can actually now speak to it. And we are so, so thankful to have her here and have her in these power positions. Welcome, Nayara, and thank you for coming on Mommying While Muslim today.
I am so excited and to be recognized as a mom and a Muslim mom, which is a very unique thing at this point in our history.
Alhamdulillah.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you know, is it really that unique? Because that was kind of like Mommy While Muslim. There's more of us out there than get represented. You know, we're always presented on the media as, and you know this, like as the crying, like illiterate woman or whatever, or like having to wear burqas. And it's like, no, not in America. That's not what we look like, you know? And there's a lot of moms and we are normal people that deserve the mic. And I'm so glad that you have it and you are in such power position. So I'm just super excited you're here. And well, we usually kick off the podcast by asking a little bit about your momming story, whatever you're comfortable sharing about your kids, and your momming philosophy. How do you kind of, you know, rule the roost, if you will?
So the idea of being a mom and Muslim and all of these different identities at the same time has been fun. I mean, I feel so lucky that I have the opportunity to explore each of these aspects of myself in ways that I absolutely know. My mom, who was an immigrant from Pakistan, a really fierce personality, she was just not able to do that, right? Mm-hmm. For a variety of reasons. And I really truly feel like I got the best of them. And, you know, of course there's generational trauma that I'm still trying to leave behind me.
Yes.
And that's a big part of the idea.
We'll talk about that in another podcast, bring you back on here for that.
It's its own series.
Series.
I really try with my kids to think deeply about what it means to be spiritual, to be part of a community that is Muslim, but also bigger. That involves other people. And that is about being what it means to be in a society where everyone is different. And that can either lead to tribalism or that can lead to finding some really wonderful ideas of community. This is especially important for me because I am Muslim. My husband is Muslim. But both of us don't look together like a stereotype of what most Americans think Muslim looks like. I am South Asian descent, like New Yorker to the core. My husband is African American. And when we first met, we would joke that people would see us around and be like, oh, well, that's all like Hindu chick and, you know, a Christian guy. Because obviously, like, they wouldn't, why would we code as Muslim to most people absent the physical signifier? So add on to that the layer of I have two children who I call Black children. Right? Like that is an important thing for me to pass on to them, that they have a deeply American history that has been about overcoming adversity, that has been about being resilient. And a lot of times the communities that I had access to when I was younger did not see the Black communities that way. They did not see that message of hope, right? They saw that sense of immigrants being divided against other minorities for the greater project of whatever political party happened to be in charge. So that is a very deep intentionality for me as a parent, and to find that support within our faith, right? Or at least the theory of the faith, and working towards a better practice of that. I all of that ties in together for me every single day.
I absolutely love that. That makes me so happy.
Alhamdulillah. Like, honestly, that's the truth of it. Like, being able to hold on to your identity as American Muslims, obviously, because we are this cross-sectionality of so many different things, and we want to be able to hold on to those things while still maintaining our spirituality and our culture. It's a very difficult thing to do with mixed children specifically, as I have mixed children myself, that they literally, like, we don't know what to check the box on, but what we can tell you is that we are American Muslims. And we're super proud of it, you know. So I definitely appreciate that. Speaking of which, I have a college student and I have a high schooler, both of whom have interned with Congress people here on the Virginia side. So I know a little bit about like how to kind of start your career in like diplomacy and advocacy work. Not that they necessarily want to go that route, but they definitely wanted to keep it open. So what do you think, for people that don't know, how did you start your career and how would you recommend somebody else in starting a route towards that diplomatic advocacy work that you are so, so well known for?
I am so glad that you asked this question because I was the intern who never left. I grew up in New York, came here for an internship. And then this is like, now I'm talking to you guys more than 20 years later. It came to me though, to truly as there was a passion there to understand the system. Like, what is it about this American thing? What is this about elections? What is this about Congress? And I was that student who was attracted to history, foreign affairs, and politics. I liked the stories of national identity, how people build systems to figure out how to talk to each other, who has rights, who doesn't. And it's been a constant thread for me to find interest in the jobs or pursue the jobs that allow me to explore and understand that better. So I think there has to be the through line of passion about what it means to be part of a secular political system. And then it's the get your foot in the door, right? The internship is the way to do it. So much of being on campaigns and being in the governance side is remembering that every single person in Congress, as a congressperson, anybody, you know, the president of the United States, all of these folks, they rely on people to vote for them. And the people who don't show up actually don't end up mattering to them. Like, there are bigger principles. They'll talk about human rights. They'll talk about other issues. But the folks who show up, they will look at voter data. And they know, in this part of my district, this is a really active community. I need to pay attention, right? Squeaky wheel gets the grease. And no matter how many great ideas and theories of the case you have, that's just the day-to-day human reality. And we see this even with our kids, right? Like, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And yes, whatever energy you may have left over at the end of the day, you can think about the longer term and the bigger picture, right? So they are human. And they're also in a bubble of people who are also doing the same thing. So that's the inside the government lane. There's also the folks who, regardless of what party is in power, they are there to do the service of government. And I love them. I love the civil servants. I love the folks who are foreign affairs officer. That's a little less of a just who you know and make sure that you have a good network and you're a good worker type thing. It's less chancy and less risky. There's more security. And that's, you can, you know, get a government job. That's the based on very specific skill set that you've developed, right? So the Foreign Service, you take an exam, you get in, they train you up. You have a career, you have a service that you belong to. Same thing with civil service. So all of these government jobs are amazing. They're wonderful, but one is more about playing a game of who you know and what, you know, understanding a lot of the intangibles of a moment. And the other is about truly having expertise and committing to a field, a specialty, and doing that day in and day out. Both of, I think, are necessary and absolutely need more visibility for Muslims in those spaces. When I first started out, we had barely started doing Jummah on the Hill, and it was like two dudes and then me and a couple of other young folks, like five or six of us. But it was like, oh, these were the two dudes who started it all and like were the first ones to pave the path. And I love that now I don't know who all the Muslims are working in government. And it should be that way, right? Like, this is not just about the personal connection, but it is a community. People are integrated, they're engaged. And I love that. So more people need to do it, because that's how you get the system to care.
Alhamdulillah.
Make that wheel squeak.
Yes. Yeah,
absolutely. So I have a two-part question. How many presidents did you serve under? And what points in their terms did you just go, WTF, dude? Because we know we have, and we just wanted to know what walls you hit, because this is, you know, what's going on in Palestine series, right? So like, what walls did you hit when it came to Palestine and the multiple aggressions in it in the last decade alone? Tell us about a couple of times that stand out in your mind about where you were just like, WTF, they're not getting it, you know?
I have been very careful in who I choose to work for. And I lucked out. I mean, for me, there was never a question based on where I grew up and the dynamics that I saw that I was going to be part of the Republican Party, because I just, all sorts of reasons in terms of where I was locally. I decided early on, and I mean like at like 15, right? And my parents were Republicans at the time. I decided like 15, 16, I was like, I want to be part of a big tent of many different kinds of people. And I'm not a conformist. And that absolutely, the not conforming has definitely seeped into my practice of Islam also. And I lean heavily on the standing up for the oppressed part of our ethos and ethic, and you know, standing up and building solidarity, than I do for some of the other more top-down authoritarian elements that, you know, are attractive to other people. So for me, that's a big distinction between the two political parties as well. And I'm like perfectly happy to be in community with people who are not a orthodox version of what family values should be, right? Because I'm like, I live in a secular society. I want the freedom to make my choices and let other people make their choices. We answer to God at the end of the day. So that was a very early political awareness of my place in American society. And like I said, deeply informed by Islam and how I'd been learning and trying to understand it at a young age. So that also, for me, was very clear. I'm not going to be a political appointee in a Republican administration, which means I'm not going to be that person that comes in from a campaign to work for George Bush.
Yes.
Civil servants work regardless of who the person is, right? They keep government working. They're agnostic. They're like, it is my job to serve. That's it, period. I'm like, that is not me. And so I knew. Now, even within that, I did not work. Like when I worked for Pelosi, she was a fierce human rights advocate. I just, to some degree, lucked out that I was able to get a job as a young staffer when she first became Democratic leader, but she was against the Patriot Act. I was on the floor. I was a staffer or an intern, I forget, but I was allowed to be on the floor to hear the State of the Union speech, which was so cool at the time. Mm-hmm. And then the words were axis of evil, right? This is George Bush's State of the Union post 9/11, making the case for why we need to go invade Iraq. And all of that post 9/11 counterterrorism, what it did to our community's narrative, like I experienced that in my early 20s and saw what it was doing to the policies and government around me. And the boss I had at the time was like, I'm voting against this. And there are plenty of Democrats who voted for the Iraq War.
Yes.
And I held on
underrated
to that for
fact,
a long
by
time.
The way.
Right. And a lot, and I remember the discussions that, you know, you kind of overhear as a young person, even though you're not part of them, of that so much of it for folks was a political calculus and not what they actually believed was right. And that stuck with me, that Nancy, as a leader, for all sorts of other things I know that folks can complain about, but as a leader, she was like, make other people come with you.
Yes.
Right? Lead. Don't follow alone. And that's, it's a big distinction. And you see that, right? The chasing the polls or chasing, this is what everyone thinks. So how can I sound and look appropriate to that? So that had a big impact on me as a young woman. Also, she didn't run for office until she was in her 50s and had 5 kids. And I'm like, I stop it at 2. Like, I don't know how you do that.
And you're like, good for you. Good for you,
I mean,
to start the second
to
part
money,
of your life.
Let's be clear. She married money. But still, like, 5 kids? What?
Yes.
Well, should we share that we each have 4?
Like, bless you. We wanted to have 4 initially, but I'm 42. I'm like, that's just not going to – it's not happening. Like, this is –
And
I
after one, you're like,
caring.
Oh, I don't want this anymore.
My mom starting at 23, I'm like, oh, you had that thing called energy.
Yes.
Right? Money and emotional training might not have been there, but baseline energy was there.
Yes. Yeah. It is a very, definitely
not a good reason to get pregnant.
Yeah. So I have a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old, right? So I had a COVID baby, and my COVID baby was, I was like, what, 39 when I was pregnant with her, right? Yeah. So this is like, it's a very different experience than when you're just are physical. And my mom's like, oh, when I was pregnant with you, I was running around in heels. I'm like, I can't even put on shoes right now. What are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly. You're like, what are you talking about, mom? Like, that's
well,
that's
the heels back then were all wide width and really ugly. True. So that's probably why she
that is. That is true. That is true.
Yeah, they had block heels
and
back
I've also,
then.
In the looking at my mother and looking at the Pelosi, like, I reject that I need to be super mom, superhero paradigm.
Yes.
I'm not doing it.
This month's episodes are sponsored by Guidance Residential. Guidance Residential is thrilled to also partner with Muslim women professionals for an empowering workshop titled Home Ownership for Muslim Women. With a global community of over 800 million Muslim women, this event is going to be held on December 14, 2023 at 6 p.m. Eastern Time and aims to provide essential insights and tools for women's journey towards financial independence. Join Guidance Residential in supporting this impactful initiative and empowering women to navigate home ownership with confidence. You can click on lu.me/OK6AEG34 for a $15 webinar. Sign up and be a financially independent woman who also owns her own home.
Are you a fan of the Mommying While Muslim podcast? Well, we've got something special just for you. Join us on Patreon and support the incredible mama's voices behind this empowering show. With just the cost of a cup of coffee per month, you can help us reach our goal by having 100 patrons by the end of the year. Let's come together and uplift these amazing voices. Join our community on Patreon today.
Not doing it.
And there's no concept of it. You're as good of a mom as you are that your kids want you to be. I mean, that's really what we try to dispel here on the podcast, is everybody is the perfect imperfect parent for their child. Yeah. And we're not trying to tell you to do anything else. And everybody needs to do their own thing, which for you is doing your, like, you've paved the way for so many other women, let alone Muslim women, to kind of do these types of things. You know, we're talking about your diplomatic experience. And honestly, you have a lot of experience with Israel and Palestine specifically. Can you share anything at all of what you saw there or have heard that we don't necessarily have access to that information?
I will say this, and this goes back to why I was sharing some of the early history of it. And, you know, even as a parent, you look at the long game. I always looked at it as a long game. What am I learning? What can I contribute? What trade-offs can I handle? And I did decide pretty early, like, I will only use my voice in ways that I can be okay with it. But yes. For a long time as a press secretary, my job was to literally translate other people's words. And I was like, okay, well, this is there. I'm helping them translate. In exchange for that, I get to learn a lot of things. I see things. I'm in places where other people don't get to be. But that only holds up so long. And so while I did not work for a president I did not believe in, I worked for a president that did not do everything the way I think should have been, right? Like, I still had my own opinions. And after I worked at the Obama White House, I was like in my mid-30s, I hadn't had kids yet. And I was like, you know, we talk about diversity, we talk about women in media, we talk about what it means to own your voice. And this is like around the Me Too era. And I was like, I just need to do that for a while, because yes. I can't do this for other people all the time. And I don't want that to be the only thing my kids know about me, right? Is I silently make other people look good. Yeah. Even if I don't agree with what they're doing, I was like, whoa, that's a really messed up thing to have, right? Like, yes. And I made a career on that. That was my job. Mm-hmm. So there was a really interesting thing to realize that I had gone so deep into understanding policy that I kind of had stopped questioning, wait, what would I think? Or actually do here? What is this? It's like, okay, well, this is this person. And like, you know, I can help them go a little back and forth and push only so much. But at the end of the day, I'm not Secretary of State, right? Like, I'm not that decision maker. And so to understand at what point you want to be a decision maker in what areas of your life and do that versus always supporting other people and their power, which is, I think, a big thing for women, because we also, right, so much of the, like, be with your family, support your man, all of this plays into that. And so that's the, like, when you say, you ask the, oh, what was the moment where you hit the wall? Like, well, I know I ain't working for Trump. I think he's going to win. It ain't going to be Hillary, because America's too sexist to elect a woman from the Democratic Party. Let's start with that. Let alone somebody who has been chasing moderates and not leaning into what it means to be truly part of a multicultural democracy. I'm also just done with, like, 80-year-olds running everything, which is where I'm at right now with politics. Like, let's be clear. At the end of the day, I'm going to vote for the guy who's not going to destroy democracy, right? Yes. I'm going to vote for the guy who's not going to put Muslims on a ban and list. Like, we're talking degrees of bad, though.
Yes,
like,
I don't think Biden's amazing,
but we're talking degrees.
I do want to interject and say we're not anti-ageist when we say any of this. I'm a geriatrician, so my average patient is about 85, but the average lifespan of a human being in America is like 80, 81. So we should not be voting for 80-year-olds in any office at any time. Look at them stroking out on TV
amazing,
every day.
Right? Like, the fact that we have multi-generational societies, and we should have more of that connection, more of that community. But where people used to be able to be, in my parents' generation, in their 40s, economically, in terms of affordability of a home, where you were educationally, where you were in your career and running – people need to let go of those things so that we can have those experiences too. And similarly, show me as a millennial what it means to age well, what it means to live a life. Like, I need to see that this is not it. I can't continue this for 40 years.
Yes.
What is this thing about being an elder, being wise, being that person? Like, how do you do that in life? Like, show me that. But part of that is also, the flip side is, let us make the decisions that affect us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the condescension I see, even from 50-year-olds, and I teach undergrads, I love that. I love seeing the way they talk about things and the assumptions that they have about society and life that took me 20 years to get to. That's your starting point. I think it's amazing. Yeah. And so for somebody in their 70s to sit there and be like, oh, kids these days, rah, 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 I'm like, embrace the change. Yes. Embrace that, like, this is growth. This is what is good for society and like what we should be doing. I just, yeah, there's some, when we talk about power, there's some weird stuff. My parents got to vote for people their own age for president.
Yes.
Right? Multiple times. Mm-hmm. The Bush election, the Clinton elections, the Obama elections. I'm like, what's this going on here?
Yeah.
Anyhow, that's my rant on. I know it's easy for it to sound ageist, but it is like a
full-on. But we've made the disclaimer. I think we're okay. And I support you in that it should, they should look like us, be our peers. So you were tired of working for people.
Too, let's be clear.
Yeah, it's okay to look like us. That's female too, would be great.
All the things.
Yeah. So in any case, instead of making other people look good and trying to figure out where's your voice in this, I want to kind of track to, you know, the disinformation on Israel and Gaza as well, like fueled in part, of course, by social media. We know it's like where a lot of people get their primary source of information. Did that also inspire you in order to take on the new roles you've had, like as a radio, as a reporter and a radio talk show host? Because the role of truth telling, like, why is it so critical at this particular junction where we are right now when it comes to Gaza?
I think there's two things happening right now, right? The algorithms that we have and where we get our information right now are skewed towards things that make us angry, things that make us like, you know, negative emotions. And so me being a mom on Instagram and, you know, Instagram just knows like, all right, she's posted a kid, send her more stuff. I am now primed to get images of children being killed.
Yes.
Right. So like this is what it's doing to us. It is inciting us. It is not showing us information. And granted, I'm not showing us the information to make rational decisions and make better decisions. So that inflaming is a thing that happens. It is a thing that is deeply tribal, and social media is capitalizing, literally making money off of our instincts to be tribal.
Yes.
What I have actually found very interesting about now versus then, when I was first coming up in government and politics, is the recognition of Palestinians, the recognition of Palestinian rights, the use by government officials of terms of occupation, the recognition by many people in government. Again, it's a generational difference that the PLO of Yasser Arafat is not who we have today in the country, right? That an entire generation of Israelis and Palestinians have grown up with this sense of, okay, you know, there is a basis for being a democracy and a basis for living in a two-state solution. And the internet and activity has shown us what some of the imbalances are.
Yeah.
And I have visited the West Bank. I've not been to Gaza, but I've been to, I've been to Jerusalem. I've been very blessed to be able to do that multiple times, that the disparity is very clear of what it means to go to work every day from the West Bank and have to go through security checkpoints. What it means to be driving a car in Tel Aviv as somebody with a license plate that marks you as other.
Yes.
Right. Like, oh, this license plate is this color. Therefore, know that that is a Palestinian or an Arab. Like, it's just out there in public, which is a very weird thing when you grow up in the States. Like, we don't have those types of government modifiers and signifiers. So this idea of Israel being a democracy and a Jewish state and how that continues is a conversation that's happening in Israel right now. Like, it's not like this generation is supporting Netanyahu. Like, he is barely hanging on by a thread. And there are protests every day outside of the Knesset for him to stop his bombing campaign. Yet here in the United States, it's seen as like a unilateral, you either support one position or you're off your rocker. And that generational disconnect that already is acknowledged and recognized in the region has not fully been recognized here in U.S. politics.
That's really interesting.
That's actually a really interesting point. And, you know, how can we then shore up that discrepancy? What is it that we can do as a community to kind of help shore that up so that there isn't this huge disconnect that would lead to inevitably misinformation, which incites people, like it becomes this like hamster wheel cycle. What is it that we can do to kind of break that so that we're all on the same page? On we can have different opinions, but at least have some sort of, we all can agree on X. How can we get to that point?
Two things of like messaging advice, right? Like communications consultant messaging advice here. One, if you get into a conversation in which you or somebody around you is denying the value of a child and the life of a child, Palestinian or Israeli, get out of that conversation or you've lost your way. One or the other. Like once you go there, nothing good is happening. You need to check yourself as a human being. Right. And I have seen this 100%. In different multiple circles where it's like, whoa, 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 basic humanity. Let's protect that for ourselves and the conversations we're a part of. Children are children, period. Right.
Off limits.
The second thing is a tactical thing, which is about what you're trying to make the case for and how. In this moment, the more the focus is on the violations of law and human rights in this moment, that is a stronger argument for protecting Palestinian civilians than anything else right now. The second we start going down the road of, well, this point in history and that point in history, but you do this and you did that. Again, my family, partition, Pakistani American. Trust me, there's all sorts of history that our peoples can go down and back and forth. Well, but you did this. And then you focus on the now, focus on what is happening right now and be consistent. And that is how you keep it targeted, how you keep it in the moment, and how you force solutions about that specific thing, which is ultimately about saving lives. Right.
So let me ask you this, because I agree, but that I've actually had conversations where people, despite the fact that the UN has said there are humanitarian, atrocities happening, their response is, well, I don't necessarily agree with the UN.
Or you just label that organization anti-Semitic. Like anti-Semitic.
So what do you do? Because I've had multiple conversations, and to your point, I've walked out of the conversation because I'm like, obviously, if we're not going to agree on basic, factual things, we're not going to go further than that. But what do you do in a circumstance like that other than walking away when somebody denies the basic facts?
Two answers on that one. I think the recognizing in any discussion, like I said, members of Congress look at who they are talking to and who
exactly.
Right? We also are not going to be able to convince everybody. Like, who are the people that we can bring along? Who are the people already with you? Everybody else just got to let it go, right? Like, I can't convince everybody. There are Trump supporters. Bless them. Move on. There's nothing I can do to save you. I have a limited amount of energy and time right now. I can't. So it's being very clear about that.
Yes.
The people that you feel like you can connect with, it's the common human element. And so random data points don't actually help those people. It's human stories and human connection. What helps is, at what point, like if you are on the playground, what are you telling your child to do? Are you actually telling them if they got hit, they need to go and kill the person?
Right.
Right? Because that literally does translate to how decisions are made in foreign affairs.
Yes.
And countries make choices. Hamas made a choice. Let's be clear. Mm-hmm. Hamas made a really bad choice. Really, really bad choice. Yep. But they made a choice. And they have historically, and Netanyahu have historically been on the same end of the spectrum of, we ain't going to live in peace.
Yeah.
One of 100%. Us has to dominate. Right?
Yes.
That is so. Anything arguing about Hamas justification or Netanyahu justification, I'm like, great, you're on that end of the spectrum. I'm arguing for people to be able to live with a basic sense of decency and humanity in places that they consider home, period, full stop. Let's rally around that. And the way to rally around that is not to make excuses when people make bad decisions. And right now, Netanyahu does actually have other choices. We have many countries telling him he has other choices. He is making a choice the same way Hamas is making a choice.
Yes.
I will. And then where I land in all of this is all these leaders got to go. They've had 20 years. They've had 20 years to do the same thing over and over again. Go, move on. There's a younger generation.
Not doing it right.
There's a younger generation that is united around a sense of common humanity because we are connected through the internet or whatever. But the idea that there were 5,000 plus Jewish Americans arguing for a ceasefire in New York at a rally was not something I grew up with. So yes, I see 100%. The change. I see the generational change, and I want to embrace that. With embracing that, though, does come a recognition Israel's not going anywhere. You can call it and label it whatever you want, but Israel's That's not true. Going anywhere. It exists, period, full stop. That's hard for a lot of people in the Muslim community. They want to be able to make peace. They want to be able to get good things without recognizing that Israel exists on the world stage. And that's, I think, an emotional piece for a lot of elders and a lot of Muslims in general. That's very difficult to get past.
That's a very good point. That's interesting.
Because people will go down the rabbit hole of, well, the Balfour Declaration, and then this happened, and then that happened. I'm like, I get it. Yes. Trust me. I know all aspects of the history. I get it. What does that do for you right now?
Yeah, that's true.
We have to go from here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like that stance because I've been falling down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that we should go down the route of the Saudis, right? Where you're like, oh, we don't care about Palestinians. Therefore, we can go down the route of recognizing Israel. I'm not saying that. But I am saying Egypt and Jordan had figured this out.
Yes, they did.
20, 30 years ago and figured out like, okay, this, we cannot correct for every single thing that happened in history. So I spend my energy in what about now? I'm informed by history, but what can I do right now?
That's a good
point. I love
that. And that's not a common thing. That's going to be my new line. It's not the most progressive thing to say, but it's my reality.
I mean, I think it's the reality of a lot of people, but you know, we're going to have some Palestinians on to tell us what their take is. And I suspect that it will be very different, but I really embrace that.
How many Palestinians are already there? They're like, please just stop treating us like shit.
Yeah.
We get it. Right? Like, we're here. You're here. We work. Like, we come to work. We get this. Like, it is activists, I think, fill a different bucket than people who just want to live their lives every day.
Yeah. The day-to-day people. Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah. And just thank you for, you know, sharing it with us, sharing your expertise with us, and your really honest takes. I appreciate it. You said WTF too, and you also said Israel exists. I appreciate that. So thanks so much. And, you know, go save the world. Jazakallah khair for coming on. And jazakallah everybody else for listening. Assalamu alaikum.
Thanks again for joining Zeba and Uzma on Momming While Muslim today.
Please email us your thoughts or questions and follow us on Facebook and Instagram because this podcast was designed to cater your needs.
Make sure you check out the show notes to find the links and resources for this episode. And remember to help a mama out and leave a review of the show, as well as to like it on your podcast app of choice, because that helps us grow.
Tune in next week for another episode of Mommy While Muslim. Assalamu alaikum, everyone.